Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Timberwolves and Gophers edition. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us very shortly. And well, here we are again. Here we are again in this Big Ten race that we're slipping behind the folks that we got to be ahead of to get into the big dance. I mean, it really breaks down to three letters or three words, right? NIT or the big dance. I mean, this one hurt. This one hurt. The Iowa loss, if you're just tuning in and you don't know what the hell we're talking about, of course, we're talking about the Gophers losing to Iowa at home. Not a great way to close the game. They just couldn't hit a bucket, and that happens. You know, you go through sometimes in basketball, it's a game of runs, right? So you don't get field goals from time to time, but you do have to get free throws. And although they got to the line somewhat, not a ton, but somewhat, they didn't take advantage of it even all the way to the last one with the Turo. So welcome back, though. It's been a little bit. We had a little issues. I had a little issue, I should say, with my Skype account getting into it, yada, yada, yada. But we're back. We're going to talk Gophers. We're going to talk Timberwolves. We're going to start by talking about this Iowa game. And now you're looking at it and you're thinking, man, do they got to win four out of their next six games and then get a W in the Big Ten tourney to get into the big dance? That's probably what it's going to take. This one hurts. You look back at it, that on the road at Purdue, a couple of these games, you look back at it and you just go, oh, man, it was right there. That's going to be the difference. You know, that's probably going to be the difference in the season. We'll see, though. There's still time left, but it's not looking great. Sure, this isn't a bad loss when it comes to the quadrant, you know, the quadrant. It is a quadrant. It's a ranked team. It's a quality loss, but after a while, you know, when you're a 500 club, the quality loss thing starts to get lost. We'll actually give you some stats on how many basically like 16 win teams or whatever even made it to the tournament. I got a little stat on that, but we're going to break this down and like I said, just kind of look at these upcoming games and how important they are. We are going to talk a little Timberwolves. We have a very, you know, a short, what has it been, three games since we got the new squad? And that's basically what it is. So it's the sample size is little, but now we have a feel, a minor feel of some of these players and how they're going to glue together. We're going to talk about the Timberwolves and gluing it together. Going to talk about some important things, some goals, basically, for the last 30 games and change or whatever the hell it is. It may be less, I don't know. But what are the goals? You know, we have some bird rights, meaning, you know, a couple of these guys that we traded for, they're going to be free agents, but we can put out, you know, some money to them and see. We can basically really test the true worth of these players because we can sign them and you know, sign them to like, hey, here, we'll give you this. Is there going to be another team that comes in and matches it or not matches it, goes over, and then we can really see that market. Do we want to match that or not? So we're going to talk a little bit about that Timberwolves club and, like I said, the goals left in the season. So we're going to definitely break all this down. But before we do, if this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, welcome. We'd like to appreciate everyone that listened to the Purple People Eaters Vikings edition and a little bit of Gophers at the back end of that football wise, but now we're knee deep in the basketball season. And like I said, if this is your first time, you can listen to it on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. So the Living in Loserville podcast is underneath that umbrella of the Ropeadope Radio podcast, but you don't have to just listen to it on Blog Talk. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, you know, Spricker, TuneIn, I mean, a bunch of different platforms. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. In fact, you can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn or Spotify to find each platform. why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And real quick, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, maybe you have and you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. Not to be confused with AT&T TV, okay? That's just regular cable, and that's in the limited areas. I'll tell you a little bit about that. But for AT&T TV Now, we have the 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts either way. The plans start as low as $60 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. It's called AT&T TV Now. But if your internet, you live in an area where your internet is just not all that good, you can try the AT&T TV. Okay, that's the cable, normal cable system. But that is in limited areas. It is growing, whether it's here in Minneapolis, whether it's parts of New York, parts of Texas, parts of Florida, California, all the way up to the Northwest and Seattle and Tacoma, more places in the Midwest, Topeka, Wichita, St. Louis, Springfield, Missouri, a variety of areas where you can find it. So just go to the website, Google it, go to the website, put your area code in and see it if it's available in your area. But internet-wise, streaming live service-wise, AT&T TV Now. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Aaron. Just kind of see where he's at as the dog days of winter are upon us. It'll go from negative something to jump up to 18 to 20. It's kind of been all over the place. How you doing, sir, on this fine February day?
Not too bad. You're right. The weather has been a little bit sporadic. Like, it's freezing the other day. Now it's kind of warm. But, yeah, it's, you know, like you said, dog days of winter. But, yeah, that loss today, man, it's a head-scratcher at the end. Just couldn't get a bucket. And, you know, when you needed it, too, they played decently well, kind of an even-matched game. But you're right about, like, you know, Daniel's got to put some weight on, I think, if he's going to be battling guys like Garza a lot. So, yeah, we'll get into a bunch of that. And bad loss, man. I mean, now we're in a situation where you're right. You know, you might have to, you know, pull a rabbit out of your hat in the Big Ten tournament to get into the NCAA tournament. But you got a couple good opportunities coming up, so we'll get into a little Gopher basketball.
That's a good call. That's the beauty of being in the Big Ten. You do have, you know, you have the opportunity still in your, you know, in your sight. But, yeah, I mean, there's a couple of times the Gophers in the second half, you know, got up. Yeah, they got up like 5 minutes in, 41-33. Iowa was still kind of, you know, hanging with them. There's about a 4 or 5 minute stretch where it was kind of stuck on 41-35 with the Gophers leading. Then they kind of tightened it up, got it to 40-41. Actually, they got down with 10 minutes of play, and then they kind of stretched it back out. And it was kind of nip and tuck down the stretch, of course. I even looking at it, 47-47 with 7 minutes left. And then, you know, Gabe hit a three. Peyton hit a three. Arturo made a jumper. And 5:25 on the clock, it's 55-47. You know, at home, you're playing good. You got to finish that one off. And we'll talk about it, like you said, with the tour and whatnot. But down the stretch, dude, it just it's ugly. It was ugly. Like I said earlier, you're going to go through times where you're not going to hit field goals, you know, from the field, right? But so you miss some shots. Okay, but they had 5 turnovers. You know, 5 turnovers in that five-minute stretch, basically. They didn't score a bucket for the last 5:23, it was 11-0 run at the end of the day. And it's one thing to miss the bucket. Maybe you got the shot you want and you just missed it. I can live with that more, but it's the turnovers. Arturo traveled. Willis, like, got his shot blocked. Bad pass by Gabe. Like, it's just a turnover, you know, back and forth, and it just – it'll catch up with you in a game like this when you're playing an opponent like this. there were moments where it looked pretty damn good. Arturo early actually did a decent job on Garza early on, and then they didn't. The big thing early on, they couldn't hit a three. And after a while, Aaron, like, how many below 40% shooting days can you have as a team? It's worn on us that this season we're 12-12 now. And, that's why I'm kind of using that 4 out of 6, because, that 16 mark I'll get into it in a little bit, but you just can't do it. And then even when they did have a chance to tie it, you know, Daniel missed the front end of a 1-1 and the free throw. I mean, what was the free throws? 6-12, which is 500, or you know, 50%. That's not good, but just getting the line 12 times, not great. There wasn't a ton of free throws in general. They only got there 14 times. They didn't shoot the lights out, but they just did enough in that way.
Well, that's been frustrating me all season. I mean, at least this last stretch of five games has been really frustrating, because I think they could have pulled out at least one other game had they shot better from the free throw line. It's not a great free throw shooting team, and that's always frustrating, because I mean, you should take your shots in practice. It should, you know, you should theoretically be above 70% free throw, and they might be, but you know, timely makes of free throws is important, and especially when you're going to get the yips like you did tonight. And I don't know if it was the yips, but you know, you get tight at the end of the game, and it really looked like that. You know, turnovers, missed bunnies, missed shots. You know, at least you can know to close out a game. If you can shoot free throws, you can get to the foul line, help you close out the game. And then they just don't have that. You know, I think this is the second time in a week or whatever the last game was that Arturo missed a couple very important front ends of one-on-ones. And you can't do that. I mean, to make that next step, you got to make your free throws. You're going to have hot and cold nights, and they really have. I mean, both road and home, they've shot really well some nights and then really terrible other nights. And you know, they win when they shoot well. They don't win when they don't shoot well. They're a fairly good defensive club. They've got to find some consistency or a through line through which they can continue to play. And you got to make your free throws. I think that would drastically change the outcome of at least two or three games. I can't really tell you the specific games, but I have a vague memory of, you know, just hit that free throw and it changes the whole dynamic of the game. And I want to say it was in the Penn State game they had a chance too, and they just couldn't hit free throws coming down the stretch, but I'm not sure if that's the one I'm remembering or not. But yeah, man, I mean, that's huge. And it's dovetail off of what you said about that, man. It's just frustrating, especially that front end. Get that first one, get that second one. You got to hit free throws. It's just fundamental basketball.
Yeah, and like, shooting 35% from the field. You know, Iowa only hit 4 threes. Gophers hit 7. But we took 25 of them. That's 28%. They took 13. You know what I mean? So that tells you right there that they're like, you know, we're going to actually do some other stuff as well. Like I said, Garza, at times, you know, ate Ortura's lunch, you know, at times. And we've seen this that I didn't want to say his name because I say it wrong, from Illinois. I don't want to offend anybody. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, that dude kind of ate his lunch at times. And it's like also, you know, like they say, I'm going to take your lunch, but go get me seconds and give me your lunch tickets for tomorrow. That's what it's starting to feel like a little bit with Arturo. But when you look at the shooting, dude, 3 of 12 for Carr. Kelscher, 5 of 12. 3 of 9 for Willis, who actually did get a spark early. He actually played pretty good. So they just, as a whole, didn't shoot that well. And once again, in the guy we've been talking about a little bit, who we are probably going to have to depend on regardless of what happens next year as far as our center leaving. But, you know, he had 5 points in 16 minutes, had 4 rebounds, couple assists, and had 3 blocks. But then you look at everybody. You look at everybody else, 0 points.
Don't you think that Daniel, like, don't you think that he projects in the next level to, like, a stretch 4? I say that because with Eric Curry, we could have had, you know, maybe a different five in there. I don't really think Daniel is in position as a center. I mean, if you go up against a guy like Garza, like, you know, you want to take a look at it. Just imagine him playing next to Garza, a true five, and you'd have a whole different thing. I just don't think, I think you're watching a good power forward play center and try to defend centers. And I think a lot of that is the issue with him, because you don't really want him to put that kind of weight on. What you want him to do is develop a nice outside shot and work that stretch four type of game. But they just don't have the bodies and anybody inside that could actually play that five. And so now they got him at the five, kind of out of position. And I think that's where you end up in some defensive liability with Oturu in the middle.
I mean, I don't really look at him like a stretch four because he can't hit the outside shot. So I don't – if you can't hit the outside shot in college consistently, it's tough to be a stretch four in the pros. But you are right as far as development. And you're definitely right. I do agree with the four, though. That is a great point. I think that you're definitely making a good point. But if you look in the league, if he's not a knockdown shooter, he's not going to be a stretch four. They're going to put him at center. Because if you can't shoot from the outside, you're going to play center. You know, you're going to play defense, you're going to rebound, and then you're going to be able to, like, run plays that are, you know, not have to run plays. Forum type guy, at least the rich, you know, when he gets in the league or whatever. But you are right about the four, though. I agree. That is a good call. And we saw, you know, when we had guys next to him, you know, two guys next to him on and off, you know, the rotation, that definitely is a key. And you wonder, Aaron, in his head right now, is he thinking, I still think he's going to go to the combine just to go and get there. And if they do, if he does start to have some weaknesses that are getting exploited, you know, while they do the combine stuff, when they go the one-on-ones and they go five-on-five and the two-on-twos and that type of thing where you can really see guys matched up. And a lot of times when you come back the next year, you can show the scouts what you've improved on. So I still think he'll go through that process, or at least there's a good chance. Not to say he won't go pro, because he, you know, there's still a good chance he will, but I wonder, Aaron, if a couple of these games now down the stretch and the fact that he does have to put on strength, not so much weight, right? It is strength. It is getting stronger. Yeah, he doesn't all of a sudden need to put on 50 pounds because that'll probably slow him down. I wonder if it's starting to turn the other cheek, so to speak, where you're like, maybe I should come back a dude. We could have a dominant team and I could really – you know, improve, because look at the jump he made this year. I would have never guessed he'd be this good this year even. But now it is starting to – a lot of things I think he worked on, they caught – he put them on tape, and now they've caught up to it a little bit. And I'm wondering if in the back of my head, if this type of season in the long run from a fan – from a, you know, from a fan's perspective, a greedy perspective, right, a biased perspective – I wonder if he's not going to come back now.
Well, that's a good point, man. I mean, just as you were talking, I kind of had the thought, well, if he's going to project to a four, you know, he might be able to leave this year. But if they're going to think about playing him at the five, if he doesn't develop his shot, he's definitely going to need another year, like you said, for strength, for a little bit of weight, and a little bit of polish, technique. A lot of that stuff, I think, defensively, is experience and technique on how to defend bigs. And you know, it all depends on what position they see him as. I know there's not a lot of true centers in the NBA anymore, is kind of why I was saying maybe he projects to that four. But you're right. I think a lot of it has to do – I think he will visit the combine, like you said, and if they say, well, you're going to be an NBA center, well, then you need to come back another year. If they say, well, you're going to be an NBA four or maybe even a 3-4, you know, then he possibly could come out. I mean, he's still a young kid. He's, what, maybe 20 at the most? And he's got a lot of gifts. He's quick. He's good around the basket. He's good in transition. Decent defender. So I feel like you're right. It's going to be hard to tell. I think it matters more where he's projected to play in the NBA as to whether or not he will or will not come back to the Gophers.
And, you know, not having that outside shot may drop him down a little bit when they start to narrow it down and be like, yeah, but that guy does. So, man, maybe what, you know what I mean? So, We'll see. You know, a lot of these projections are just that. You know what I mean? And you can look at all these draft, you know, mock drafts and all that, but I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we went through this with Amir last year, and he wasn't even in the first two rounds of these mock drafts. And then he went out. He got all hot at the end of the year with his threes. And he turned the corner, looked the part at the combine, all this stuff, and then he didn't get drafted. You know what I mean? So it'll be interesting, man. It'll be interesting. I mean, you know, I always want what's right for the player, so I'm not trying to hold the guy back at all. I just, you know, I'm just thinking, kind of thinking out loud or whatever. But, yeah, Garza went off. Garza went off, and he's a tough player. They got a lot of good, you know, post players in the Big Ten, no doubt about it. It's definitely still has that old-school throwback mentality for the league. But as far as looking forward, you know, in a couple of days here, Indiana at home, obviously a must-win. At Northwestern now is a must-win no matter what. Yeah, it's on the road, but you need that road victory. Then you're home at Maryland, and Maryland just took over sole first place, sole position of first place, dude, and they have been on a roll. So maybe they're due. Maybe they're due by the time we get them. Then we're at Wisconsin, at Indiana, and then at home at Nebraska. So I think that four out of six kind of holds up. If you're looking at the quadrant system and the, you know, the rankings and the net ranking and all that type of stuff, we're actually not on the bubble right now. We're not in, you know, where you're on the bubble or you're the last four in, last four out. We're not last four out. And we're not in. So we are in problems. Here's a little stat though. This came from David Warlock, from Twitter. Just to kind of give you a feel of the 16 game winners. Now it's different because we do have one of the better schedules out of that. One of the hardest schedules in the whole, especially the conference schedule, but the fewest wins for a team to ever receive an at-large bid to the tourney is 16. 11 times that happened. Most recently, though, was Georgia in 2001. The lowest winning percentage for a team to ever receive an at-large bid is 53%, 0.533. 16 and 14, Nova, in that Georgia team I was telling you about were 16 and 14. Now, you know, I don't know. I mean, the only thing we got really great going for us is that, like I said, the net rating that they do kind of split hairs with. If you're almost in or almost out, they're going to go, okay, who played the better? Yep, we're going with that. So it's there, but we're going to have to beat the four non-ranked teams. If you beat them all, okay, that would be nice. But maybe you'll have to, you know, maybe there is a road loss if you play Indiana twice or at Wisconsin. We know at Wisconsin, they're not ranked, but at Wisconsin's not going to be an easy game. So, you know, you look at if you clean up three of those because you're going to probably lose to Wisconsin and then win one of the ranked teams, maybe that's how it is, and then, you know, you do get an extra win potential in the tournament, and it could be against a quality team. It's tough to say. But, yeah, it kind of feels like that four out of six is like that'll help us because of the fact that, you know, strength of schedule.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but, you know, one step at a time, you got to get this Indiana win at home, and you got to get that road win at Northwestern. That's the one that I – kind of sticks in my craw a little bit because it is a road game and Big Ten's been tough. I know we lost at home to Iowa, but you're still not seeing a lot of road wins. You're seeing more than you did earlier in the season. And that Maryland game at home, I mean, that's one that you hope you can rise up and get. It'll help a lot on many levels. And if you can get the next three, then you put yourself in a comfortable, I won't say comfortable, but in a better position going into that next Indiana game. Might be an add to that, but you know, it's getting to the point now where you've got to string together a few wins, and this is a great opportunity to do so with Indiana, Northwestern, and Maryland at our place. If you can beat Maryland at the end of that stretch and win the other two in front of it, then you've really made some kind of hay at the right time of the year. help your seeding a little bit, maybe in the tournament, Big Ten tournament, that is, and then maybe you can, you know, build on that. But you got to have the next two at the very least, just to give you a little cushion for Maryland coming up, Wisconsin on the road. It's never a good place to win, like right. you said. You just can't. I mean, you got to beat the Badgers and the refs. It's a whole thing there, especially when it counts. And so we're to the point now where, you know, we're at must win almost every game and, you know, pulling teeth a little bit because you just don't know how they're going to come out and shoot, how they're going to come out and play, what's going to happen. I mean, after today, it's the last 5 minutes of that game. You just don't want to see anything unravel any more than it did for that. And that was a real – I mean, that one really stung because you had that game comfortably. All you had to do was get to the free throw line, make some free throws, stretch it out, you know, get those last 5 minutes behind you, win by one, win by two, whatever, get into a free throw shooting contest at the end of the game, something, but they just couldn't make anything, turn the ball over, all the stuff you don't want to see. It just seems like they sort of melted down, and they got to bounce back and play well against Indiana, who's improving. They're not great, but they're improving. And then you got to get that Northwestern game. So I'm in concurrence with you on how to wrap up the season. But, you know, four of six, that's, you know, at least three of six. But four of six really helps you.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough if you don't have that. That's a good call, though. If they could somehow string the three together, it would put you in much better shape. Because, like you mentioned, that one would be Maryland. They're ninth right now. They're going to be higher ranked than that. So, and not only that, just winning three games in a row in the Big Ten. You know, that if that isn't a confidence booster, I don't know what is. Just real quick on the if we're barely getting in, maybe, or not getting in, right? Which is obviously odds wise, that's actually a better chance we'll go to the NIT. Maybe Daniel to himself would be like, dude, and maybe the scouts too are like, dude, if you. You know, you couldn't even get your squad at a 12th seed. So I don't know if you're ready, you know. So we'll see how that all adds up. You know, at the end of the day, it'll be really interesting to see, though. We'll see. Anyway, we're going to switch to the Timberwolves. However, if you're watching I actually looked at it wrong. I was thinking it was halves. I was going to say, all right, it's about to be the fourth quarter, and this is the time that you actually watch the All-Star game in the fourth quarter. Last 5 minutes, that's when if the game's close, it's going to be a fun finish. Otherwise, it's just, a bunch of nonsense. But I just saw when I went to the NBA page here on ESPN. But switching, you know, courses here to the Timberwolves, this little mini break is good, to get, I think, some stuff together. I don't know if they'll practice the whole time because these players do need this time off their feet. But even like walkthroughs and just, you know, D'Angelo being that he's going to run the point, you know, getting his nose in the playbook, that type of thing. It does kind of come at a pretty good time in that sense, if you think about it, to have a little gap off. They let a game go in their last game without Cat, unfortunately, and they play the 21st. That's their next game. So it's still a little ways away after the break. That's home with Boston. But we have had a look-see at some of these players now. And I'll tell you what, it is hilarious that the Timberwolves – shot a franchise record, made a franchise record, 26 threes of their first game with the new squad with a bunch of, you know, improved shooters than what we had. Kind of blew me away. You know, you had like Beasley, I think he had like five of them or something like that in the first half. He was going off, and the system definitely is going to fit better for this club, no doubt about that. We'll see where it takes us and whatnot. But we're going to kind of talk about the goals down the stretch. A lot of people will say, well, the goals are tank. Tank the season. You know what I mean? So I understand some of that. Maybe we can play Cat like 33 minutes instead of 37 to get a little bit more playing time, that type of thing. you know, to maybe lose a couple of these games down the stretch. But as long as you're in the top three or top four the way they do it now, it's basically the same, you know, odds to get the number one pick. And I like how they did that. So I'm not too worried about tanking, actually, just because, hey, it's once again, it's called living in Loserville. And we lose that damn lotto over and over again besides that year with Cat. But, you know, it's not like we jump from, like, seventh or something like that. We rarely go up in that thing anyway. But, you know, what are the goals? Some of these players, just singing them now, you know, I love that, you know, on Hernan Gomez and Beasley, I just mentioned that we have their bird rights. So we can put out that waiver like, hey, this is what we're for sure going to pay you. Let's see the market. That really helps us cap-wise and just smart contract-wise. Okay, so we think you're at least worth that. We're going to – and some of these contracts will be two-year deals or something. So they can – it's good for us, but it's good for the player because – if they do thrive, then in a couple of years, they can get a bigger contract, you know. So we're not just throwing out money, but we can, you know, maybe the Knicks or a couple of teams. There's not going to be a ton of teams with cap, but with cap space, I should say. But that could be helpful. You know, we do have two players coming off the books right around that 16 to 17 million range. We may keep them. That Crab, we may keep him, but he's not going to make $17 million a year. He signed in that big, big, you know, raise of the cap year. A lot of these players did. So that's crucial. But yeah, we're just going to kind of, you know, give our thoughts on some of that. But it was pretty, I read a crazy stat that kind of opened up my eyes about this system, Aaron. And we had the most, open threes in this analytics. I follow the analytics a little bit enough to see, okay, that's a good stat. Okay, that's telling. And then, you know, a lot of the defense analytics are just some of them are, I'm not going to say a joke. Well, I'm going to say it. They're a joke. Some of them. But this one really stood out to me. So, and you notice how we're old school enough to where I had to preference that. That's just how stubborn I am. I'm not saying they're all good. I'm just saying this one. But they had the most open threes out of anybody in the league, and the open three was 6 feet or more, right? So that's pretty open, right, as far as when you release and how close the player is to you. And nowadays, for quite some time, they can put that little thing on you that doesn't weigh anything, and they can measure so many different things. That may be analytics. I agree with that stuff. But as far as, like, some other stuff with the analytics, I don't know. But the problem was we were the worst in make, the most, you know, the least, one of the least amount of makes, and then percentage shooting them. So then when you go, huh, so if we get some shooters, wow, this might actually work out here. And it's just funny that the first freaking game, they set the franchise record.
Yeah, I mean, that was a surprise. About the analytics, I guess, you know, you're a little bit more up on that than I am. I mean, obviously, if you're not making threes, you're going to get more room to shoot the threes, and you're going to get driven to shoot the threes a little bit more. You start knocking them down, you might not have as much room as you did before. That would be my thought on that. Now, I think the jury's still out on the new look. Yeah, small sample size, obviously, and really even smaller than that. One game you didn't have D'Angelo, the other game you didn't have Cat. So, I mean, you've seen a lot of the role players and the bit parts come out and play. Beasley's been impressive. Hernan Gomez as well been really impressive. I think McLaughlin's play has really risen since that. If we could just get Wiggins to, you know, play hard, I think that you know, it really helped the squad. It's just so good to not have that conversation anymore. But, yeah, you know, I like it. I've been keeping a close eye on D'Angelo a little bit, just trying to see, you know, because half of me says, okay, they're buddies and they're going to come and play hard. And the other half says, well, you know, Cat invited his buddy up here to get that easy money, you know. And
well, he's already got the money, though. He's already got a three-year contract.
He actually had to try in Golden State. State and hopefully he has to try here too. So I mean that's what my That's the flip side of my Wolves coin, is like, is this just a place to where you can come up here and loaf and still get paid? Just have your buddy doing it instead of Wiggins? I hope not. And we're going to see if that is the case. But, you know, then you're right about the tanking thing. And do you really want the draft pick in the high? And then what can we really judge for the rest of the season? You know, it makes it kind of all a little bit dubious as to, you know, what you're going to be watching. Hopefully you just come out, you watch a team play really hard, play well, and start to gel together and get some wins. I mean, that's what you want to see. But, you know, I don't know much about the contract situation of a lot of these guys, but – I know that the parts look good, you know, with Culver in there. And what are you going to look for in the draft when that comes around? What are you tanking for if that is what you're doing? It's not going to be an awesome draft this year. So, I mean, there's really nobody that stands out as the clear-cut number one at this point. And obviously it's early in the – well, it's mid-college basketball season, but – you know, I guess I'm just kind of dubious to see. Like you said, small sample size. It's hard to tell. They came out, they shot the lights out the first game. That was pretty amazing. And actually happened to win the game as opposed to losing a 27-point lead and making all those threes. And then, you know, yeah. D'Angelo playing with passion. I know McLaughlin is. That guy's always balling. And then, you know, the big guys inside, Cat, how are they going to rework that? What's going on in transition? Are we just going to be a 3-and-D team? What are we looking to do is kind of what I'm after, the questions I need answered. And a lot of that, those questions are just heart, man. It's about heart, grit, competitiveness. I mean, that I'll lose a game, a competitive game, and still be proud of the squad. But you start loafing and, you know, getting through those three quarters and then losing in the fourth, which happened the other night. Yeah. You know, that's the stuff that I'm going to be looking for, because it's been that way for years. And I don't want to seem pessimistic. I think the change is really good, but I want to see the change in, I guess, the chemistry of the team, the competitiveness of the team, those type of deals. The players have been there. The players are here. I think we're improved personnel-wise. I just think you got to start winning some games, and winning breeds winning. So, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. Do you have any concerns about, you know, what, well, let me rephrase this question. What would you do if you saw, you know, D'Angelo and Cat end up in a situation all season where they're up 10 going into the fourth and end up losing by 15?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, if it happened a bunch, then I'd have to see how they're playing. You know what I mean? Is D'Angelo driving and hitting someone for a wide open three and they miss it? Or is, you know what I mean? That's a tough one. You know what I mean? You're right, though, as far as just to kind of add on to what you said and kind of answer your question, like, the fourth quarter close, no doubt about it. As far as the slough off, D'Angelo 2 years ago really turned the corner as a player. He actually was the key. You know, the reason why the Nets, and they suck, got to the playoffs, and he didn't really, you know, he was pretty damn good there. So I'm not worried about him sloughing off per se. But it's tough to say about your question, because it's like, I got to kind of see what happened. You know what I mean? But you make a good point about that. I'm glad you brought that three-point analytic stat up, and that's the whole point of kind of – I was going to add layers to that, and you did. That was great that you said that, you know they were leaving. Sometimes they're just leaving dudes out there like Okogie, you know, and if you look at the starting lineup, now has four guys that can be more consistent, and then he's the only man that can't. It's most of the guys bringing off the bench can hit those threes too. For their position, I'm not saying they're all 40% shooters or nothing like that, but you know they can hit them better. But also, once they get closer to those shooters, look what it does to the open lane. That's what the NBA is, right? If you can get shooters, then the whole thing's wide open. Then the 1-2, you know, game between the top two players can thrive. So I think that's important too. I guess I wasn't making the point that they're going to have 6 feet open all the time. Because you're right. I mean, a couple of those dudes would be like, all right, man, go ahead, take that shot, buddy. You know, like a couple of years ago with Rubio. yeah, take that shot, man. We'll let you have that shot. And it's like, oh. So, yeah, I mean, I'd have to kind of see how it is down the stretch. But you're right, dude. I remember even when Kevin Love was here, we had, like, the most points as a team in the fourth quarter. Well, no shit, dude. When we're down 18 going in, you know, well, we make a little run and we cut it and we ended up winning the quarter. But we didn't win the fucking game. Or vice versa, like you said the other night. Now, sure, they didn't have Cat. That's a huge thing. We can't really win many games without Cat, obviously. But still, the way they were playing, you got to keep that flow. You got to get that W. Let's talk a little bit about – I'm sorry not to be able to, you know, kind of vaguely answer your question there. But it's kind of how, you know, I am looking at that, though, because that's been, man, since KG left, that you hit it right on the nose. That's been our thing. You brought up what we assume is going to be our backup point guard. What was his name? McClellan? Is that what you
McLaughlin.
Said?
McLaughlin.
McLaughlin. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Dude, what he did in that one game, though, and they said, you know, here's another, you know, with Gerson, the main man in charge. You know, this guy was with the Nets. He didn't make the club, but he was in the G League. And then he's been running our offense in the G League. They say he knows the offense the best. And you can kind of tell the guy just has something. When he had that damn near triple-double that night, dude, he became the first undrafted rookie since at least 1983 or 84 to score 20 points and 10 assists. I think we found ourselves a backup point guard. I really do. I like him. And the reason why I'm going to start with that because you brought him up, but also kind of going through some of these guys where you're like, I think that piece fits, and I think we have a guy that can continue to improve and be, like, happy in that part. I mean, he's on, you know, he didn't get drafted. He got cut last year. You know what I mean? He's been cut. So we picked him up and that type of thing, and we talked about how Gerson's really good at development. And even when, you know, we mentioned that last show, we were dealing with free agency. That's the guys that we had to go. We couldn't make all these trades. But the fact that he signed quality enough guys that other teams need to be able to make these trades tells you something. And I really think that there is something with Jordan, dude. This guy he's an interesting player, dude. So I like him. Like you said, Beasley looks the part of a starting shooting guard. He's a guy that's going to hustle. He's a guy that's kind of all over the place. I've seen him play. They had three players there in and around his position. So that's going to be tough to make the court. But every time he did, when then someone got hurt or before they signed Will Barton or, you know, that type of thing, he was damn good for him. So I'm wondering, the only team, there's only, like I said, cap-wise, maybe the Knicks. Couple people might throw something at him, but we'll probably get him for in and around starting money. So Beasley definitely stands out. What do you think of Juan Hernan Gomez? I mean, he does seem like that guy that can improve. And once again, when he got minutes, he made the most of them. Now, as a starter, he does seem like people aren't going to overpay for him yet. But we might get a good enough sample size. And he can, like I said, hit the three. He's only 24 years old. The combination of him and James Johnson, who is the vet at 32, who, by the way, is coming back because he has a player option that he'll take. He'll definitely take. But if he likes it enough, especially as a backup, you know, down the line, maybe we can, you know, sign him to a fairly cap-friendly number there. And he brings the I'm going to block you. The other day he was ready to fight somebody, like, and he can shoot the three somewhat for a big. I like that combo between Hernan Gomez and Johnson at the center position. I think those are good fits around Cat.
Yeah, before I get to Hernan Gomez, I want to go back to the Beasley thing. You know, I was saying a little pessimistic rant about, you know, what this could become on the negative side. The one thing I trust, and actually two parts of that I trust to not let that happen is one, Beasley. He plays hungry, passionate, and then the Johnson guy who possibly wouldn't let that happen. I kind of see that Johnson guy maybe as who's the big guy we had under Tibbs We got rid of him. We liked him. What was his name, man?
Yeah, it was. I can't think of it.
Oh, God, how quickly we forget.
Chicago Spears.
Yeah. It'll come to us. But he's kind of that glue guy. You know, we need a muscle guy. Some guys will start a fight. Gibson, there we go. Who will start a fight, who will do that. And we didn't have that in the Wiggins era, and it just seemed like, you know, you could just do whatever you want. A cat wouldn't really fight back. Only a couple times that he ever, you know, earlier in the year we said, well, that, some, you know, he got into a thing with Embiid, and that needed to happen. But that only happened once. You know, there wasn't anything else really, you know, to hang your hat on as far as that goes. And now you got a couple guys. I think Beasley's just hungry, man, and that's
right.
That's going to prove to be a good thing. You need hungry players, and McLaughlin, he seems to be hungry too. And I think that those are, you know, they got to feed their families in the, to quote Latrell Sprewell. And, you know, it's, you know, they need to get out there and prove what they can do. And if you got to get guys like that again and again to do it now, Hernan Gomez, quality role player. I think he does fit good around Cat. He's not a Covington type player. He's more of that, like, he'll step out, shoot, come in, rebound, do some dirty work. That kind of player can hit that mid-range, runs the offense well. I mean, that's kind of what I see him doing in his time in here. And, you know, as far as finding that backup point guard, I think you're right about that. McLaughlin's kind of laid that down. I think there were some rumors about them looking at the other Jones kid out of Duke as maybe in the draft, picking him up or something like that. And, you know, I think you're pretty good in the backup point guard as far as that's concerned. You can still maybe pick something else up. But I want to see, you know, Naz Reid, I like him a lot. I want to see another big, I think, really would be something I'd want to see going forward. You know, a muscle guy, a defender is kind of what I want to see. Reid is sort of that, but he wants to come out and hit threes too sometimes, and that's fine. But I want to see a tough guy, a defender in the middle, with some weight to him, push things around, let Cat play that four a little bit, that
right.
4 to 5 range, loosen him up a little bit, maybe take some defensive responsibility off of him, since he's not really the greatest defensive player, but he's a great offensive player. So maybe that's a piece,
sure?
I want to see.
Are you sure he's not the greatest defensive player? I don't know, man.
So frustrating, because he could be. He's got the quickness. He's got the feet.
If JG was in practice, he would be damn good right about now.
Well,
We'll get into that, by the way.
Out. I mean, I'm starting to hear about this whole falling out with KG. I heard about that because the Boston Celtics are going to put KG's number in the rafters and retire it. Yet we've yet to do that, and that has to do with some sort of beef between KG and Glenn Taylor and the whole operation. And I'm just starting to hear. This is just the first I've heard about it this week. I want to know what's at the bottom of that. How do you chase off your franchise's best and only real superstar? For whatever reason, I just think there's something wrong with that. And I think there's something wrong where Boston would retire KG's jersey before we would. And I just think there's something that doesn't smell right to me about that. I don't know. Have you heard anything about that? I don't how that went down. I think that after Flip died, some stuff happened. And
I mean, I know it well, but let's finish it up. Like I said, we'll get to that, though, because that was going to be a barn burner question or a topic, because, yeah, it's ridiculous. But keep going kind of what we were going on or whatever. But I like Naz Reid. You're right. He's only 20, but I do like him, man. I think he's a good fit, too.
Yeah, I just a big defender. I mean, that's really what it maybe upgrading the small forward. I know Beasley can kind of go back and forth, the shooting guard and small forward. I'd like to see like a Sean Elliott type of guy. Guy can hit, can drive, can defend. I mean, that'd be cool to see in there. But, I mean, there are pieces, and if he continues to find like G League players, you know, cheap players to come in and at least work out and get a chance, I think – you get a chance to put – you've got the core down. I mean, I think what will turn out to be D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns, Jarrett Culver, maybe Beasley as a four there, maybe a new player coming in the draft. I mean, that's going to be a pretty formidable core. Now, let's just go out and watch them compete. They need to compete. I think the talent is there now to be a playoff team. It's putting it together. And getting the will and the want to to win a championship. And as of yet, I've yet to see that, but I'm optimistic that we will see that by the end of the season.
Yeah, and there's no way we could see it anyway, because even if it was all positive, they won all three games, in the end, it wouldn't mean much. You know what I mean? Even these last 30 games or whatever it is, it's still a really small sample size, but it's an important sample size, no doubt about it. Another guy, Jake Layman, who we have, who early in the season, you know, he played really good. He can come up the bench, he can start. He might be the small forward, actually, who you're talking about, that might actually play some key minutes. It goes to show you, though, like we talk about wide receivers and cornerbacks and football, obviously, and how, you know, your feet, your toes are so crucial. You know what I mean? And golly, Jake Layman, he stubbed his toe. He's going to be okay. I mean, it's a little messed up. He may have minorly dislocated. And he hasn't played in like 40 games. You know what I mean? It's like, Jesus. Like, he's a good player, like a good role player. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is, you know, I think another small forward would be nice. Culliver, you know, he's a long, lanky dude. He's 6'6". That's probably who's going to play that position. Beasley is the shooting guard, right? And then Russell, a lot of length. They've got a lot of length in there. You know, coaches love length. Oh, my goodness gracious, right? They just talk about that. Although I'll put a pause in there.
Yeah,
as well.
In every sport now, too.
Seriously, every fucking sport. You could be curling, but did you see the length when he curled? But Evan Turner, I don't bring him up because he's going to play our small forward. But he's coming off the books. And I mentioned Crabb. He's coming off the books. Not that he couldn't be a role player for us, but he's not going to make whatever, $17 million or whatever he's making. So we have big money coming off the books right there. Like I said, the only guy coming back that way is James Johnson. And I say coming back based off his contract. I think maybe another small forward. I wouldn't mind to get another point guard because injury, right? You know, if you feel like you got two, you need a third. And Trey, that would be pretty – I like that idea. Could you imagine back to, like, having both Jones brothers backing up? That'd be dope. He's a good solid player. He made a good decision, a great decision to come back. One more year there. So, and then Okogie, right now, Okogie's that pit bull. You know, like, all right, that guy, you got to go run after that dude. We need you on that dude. And I really like now he can really just focus on that. He is atrocious offensively. There's just times where, like, oh shit, he's dribbling. Oh, God, a turnover. You know, so he's going to have to come together there.
You remember the microwave Vinny Johnson?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Okogie kind of reminds me at his best he could be that scorer right off the bench. You know what I mean?
Yeah, or you know, if he's going to be this crazy of a defender, though, I'd probably rather start him because he's not offensively gifted. But I like your that is a good if he could come around offensively because you know that's why they call it the microwave because he could cook it up. But you're right, dude. That you know he's got a lot of potential. But I do like. You know, him just being, okay, you were a bulldog on defense? Just go be that. We're not asking a whole lot from you, buddy. Just go fucking rage on that dude. You know what I mean? And I think it's important to have that on the floor. And another thing about the Houston model that some people think of their team now and some people think of their team about 3 or 4 years ago, just offense, no, that's all they can do. That's nonsense. That's completely nonsense. I mean, I'm not saying the current one in the, like I said, the when they're building, but when you look 2 years ago when they were the shit, right? They got the offense going and just humming. Then they added defensive parts. Not all that different than Golden State. Remember, Golden State, they were all offense. They got, they actually made it to the second round. I think they got up like 2-1 or 2-1, something like that on the Spurs. Then the Spurs says, hey, we're the Spurs. We're going to win this one. You're done. But then the next year they went against the Clippers, and it was game 7 all the way down the wire. And I think Chris Paul, who was with that Houston team, I think he did something. Well, maybe that was the Spurs series. But either way, they got knocked out. And it looked like, oh, man, they're going to be the team. Then the next year they get knocked out in the first round. and you got Iguodala, defender. You really started bringing in guys. So it's they got the, my point is, they got the offense, got that squared away. That's going to be one of the best offenses in the league. That's where they got it. Then they added the defensive parts, Ariza, you know, that type of thing. And when they got Chris Paul, even though, you know, he didn't have to do as much as he used to do, but he's not capable of doing it right now because he's older. And he wears down throughout the season like older guys do, and he gets these minor injuries that, you know, sit him on the bench or whatever. But they were a championship-level team, and a lot of it had to do with defense. So for those who think this is just going to be an offensive squad, let's give it some time. We're talking, I mean, we're not going to make the playoffs this year, obviously. You know, now about 3 weeks ago, do we still have a chance? Yeah, we did when we were about four or five games out. We're not making the playoffs now. So, but like you said, I think that there's enough there to make a nice run next year, and that's where the bar needs to be set. Let's get in the playoffs, then we'll figure it out.
You know, Chris, you know, what I'd like to see, and I just kind of thought came to my head as we're going down memory lane of old series and old players. Yeah, I want this team to pick up somebody, or maybe if James Johnson could turn in, I want a Charles Oakley. I want a Mason. I want a tough motherfucker. You know what I mean? We don't have that on the team. We haven't had that on the team since KG, and he's really been the only one.
Well,
he's never been
now.
An enforcer.
Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, man. But I mean a bigger body, man. I mean like a big. I want a big. Some guy in there who's, you know, throwing elbows, doing shit, maybe getting some fines. I want some shit like that. We don't got that, and we haven't had it. We got a bunch of nice guys out here playing ball. And I want to see some, you know, some teeth on somebody. And it'd be nice if it was a big player, like if Naz Reid had a bad attitude or something. You know what I mean? I want to see an enforcer, something like that, you know. I mean, that's a valuable piece to a team. I don't want to say I want to turn us into the old Knicks, you know, that were fighting the Bulls all the time. You know, they were tough dudes. But, I mean, I want to see somebody on that squad who, you know, you kind of follow what I'm saying here, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, obviously
I want somebody in there.
Obviously, Oak Tree and all those dudes would be kicked out of the lead if they were doing what they're doing now. You know what I mean? I get your point, though, totally. Because Oak wouldn't make it. He'd be like, oh, 30 games is such shit. I'm out again. You know what I mean? Like, Rodman wouldn't have a career in today's NBA, unfortunately. But, no, I'm right there with you.
Well, I disagree. I think Rodman would.
No. You're not getting me. When you do cheap shit nowadays, you get suspended, is what I'm saying.
Oh, sure.
I mean, they replay.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
They replay shit off a half an elbow that didn't even, an accidental half an elbow that half the time didn't even land, is what I'm saying. Oak Tree wouldn't be able to play in the league. These guys wouldn't be able to play in the league. But I'm with you, though, as far as that. Kind of like a Kogi, in a sense. A bulldog, and that's what their shit is. That's what they're there for, just to be a bulldog.
Yeah,
I agree. And then in practice. And in practice. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying. I'm just agreeing with you, man. Like, just somebody get in there, mix it up. You know, get some kind of life going besides. And you're right, they kind of have taken that out of the game, which is really sad, I think, due to that. The defensive changes, I think, is what did that. But I miss that a little bit, man. I miss elbows. And you know, I don't want to see Laimbeer taking people out. But, you know, I'd like to see a little bit, some more fighting under the basket. And you know, guys, where muscle counts and weight counts and all that stuff. I know they try to take that out of the game. They want to score. They want to score. They want to score.
Well, but playoff basketball, basically, during the regular season.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see a junkyard dog, and I don't even know if I'm trying to think of one in the league right now.
I mean,
man.
Draymond, right?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe the Embiid kid, he's a little rough, but I mean, we need something like that. Just as a fan, I want to see that as being a centerpiece, a heart, a little grit, some toughness, defense, elbows. You know, maybe a
and
bad
that carries over in practice. If that guy is guarding Cat, he can get all frustrated he wants. It gets him used to getting frustrated in practice. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, we're going to bulldog you in practice. And that's – actually, let's go right there. Any last words, though, in general?
No. That kind of was my parting shot. I was just thinking about it, man. I was like, God, I was thinking – what I actually was thinking about was that old Nick team with Mason and Oakley and Starks. I love that team, man. I thought that team was great. They could never beat Jordan, but they could beat anybody else. This squad to have that type of attitude, and you know you can't transplant a team's attitude from one to the other. But if I could transplant one team's attitude onto these guys, it would be that Knicks team. They're just tough, gritty defense. They're a great ball team. Just couldn't beat Jordan. I mean, that was their thing. They just couldn't beat Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, same with the Pacers. They were even closer to beating Jordan. A couple years later after that. But, yeah, I'm with you. Funny thing is, the rules have changed so much, Oakley can't even be in Madison Square Garden now. He got kicked out a couple years ago. But, yeah, I'm with you there. The reason why I like the transition, we're talking about some big bulldog and cat during practice. Well, that's what we would have gotten with KG. KG and Flip had a plan. Taylor said he was in on it, and this makes sense. The plan was, you know, the president, well, he was already Flip. Flip wasn't going to be our coach forever. He needed to, you know, coach at the time because, you know, it was like he's still a good coach, but the long term wasn't necessarily Flip being the coach the whole time. He was going to be the operational guy, and he's pretty damn good at that. And KG was kind of going to be on like an internship, like learning the business behind the scenes and also putting a group together to either partially own the team like somebody else does now, and we'll get into that part, and or maybe buy it straight up, you know what I mean? And if you look back at Towns the first year when KG was on that club, he played better defense because – you know, it's just the day-to-day, not even just in practice, but that's also what KG was going to do. He was going to be in practice. So think about, for you give KG 15 minutes, he can guard anybody still for 15 minutes a game. You know, it's the other fucking, you know, 30-something he couldn't because his legs and his knees and he's old. But he can still D you up. You want to post him up right now? Good luck. Let's see what happens there. You're probably going to have to fight him, you know, and to have that day in and day out with Towns, that would have been big. And like I said, when they were playing side by side, he was better because why? Because KG would speak. He'd talk to him. Hey, this, hey, that. He knew every player in the league like the back of his hand. So he'd say, all right, tonight this dude does this. He does that. And I think that would have transferred over to, okay, this is what, like a reminder, a jump start to reminder of what I taught you back then. You got to do that night in and night out, not just on the court, but focus on the players you're going to have to guard and that, you know, tendencies and all that good stuff. But it actually all starts when we traded him because Taylor kicked him in the ass on the way out. He said some shit that was totally bullshit. And he talked about the last couple of games, how he rested because his knee was messed up, and his knee was messed up. And actually, like, they had him sit, you know, not Taylor because he has nothing to do with that. And that's the problem. Taylor had this handshake deal with McHale. They never had a contract. It was year in and year out handshake deal. Like, sure, they signed the contract that year, but they didn't have a long-term one. And meanwhile, I love me some McHale, 32 flavors. Yeah, I love that dude, right? He's got so many post moves, but he's not a good GM, obviously. He, you know, we don't have to debate that. You know what I mean? So that it started there. He kicked KG in the ass with some comments that were really bullshit. We had to talk KG in to get traded. Everybody says it. And we had to. He was still willing to rebuild, but this last time, the moment slipped past. Not that long after. It's not a day, it's not 5 days, but not long after, he sold a part of the team to somebody else. And it was like a cash flow thing, it was a variety of things. And it's just a slap in the face. It's like, dude, you know, we could have got a quality guy maybe like Gerson and still had the KG effect, because you can't tell me he wouldn't be better at defense. But here's the thing, I just wish Taylor would sell the team, because the guy bought it for $88 million in 1995. It is worth right now $1.3 billion. Sell the fucking team, dude. We get it. You made the investment of your life. You know what I mean? Like, you are a billionaire. We know that. But, dude, you just from 88 to one point, you can't sell it now? Please sell it. Can you sell it, please? But that's what it is. It's a beef. So KG was like, oh, okay, so Flip dies. We throw out the whole plan. So I understand why there's a beef there, and it's ridiculous, like you said, that a team he spent a couple years on are already going to retire his jersey. It's fucking degenerate by Taylor.
Well, I mean, it just leads me to believe that Taylor's on some bullshit. I mean, you're talking about a guy on the team, not very successful team. I mean, had we been a playoff team yearly, I mean, the net worth of this squad would be way even more than that. And I guess it just leads me to believe that, yeah, I'm with you, man. I mean, you've made your money, and, you know, but then again, it's like the devil you know, Chris. I mean, we know Taylor. We know how he operates. Shit, you get someone else in here, some high-flying owner, you know, could get up and move to Seattle. I mean, we don't fucking know what's going to happen. So I guess you got to take the good and the bad with Taylor. But, yeah, with the, if that is true, they had to beg.
Bad with him.
Yeah, I mean, if they had to beg.
Hey, no one, I doubt anybody's going to pay $1.3 billion and walk up and move it the next year, though. That's a whole. That's a lot of money. That's almost unprecedented. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, if they had to beg KG to take a trade, and then he actually did, I mean, there's something wrong there. I like McHale as a GM. I know he made the Joe Smith deal, and that's not good. But for the most part, I liked him as the face of that. The best days,
he missed,
I think,
so many times in the draft.
Oh, yeah, he did.
So I like him as a face, but not as the operating guy.
Well, I like Flip better at that, but I liked what Barrero calls the country club. I liked that those years. I thought they were good. You know, you had McHale, Flip, and then KG on the court. And you never, you know, KG never had kind of supporting cast.
Why can't we build around KG then? I didn't like that time because I loved the time with Flip and KG. KG carried so many mediocre players to the playoffs every year in the West when it was even deeper. But McHale was a garbage GM, though.
Well, I agree. But I don't agree with that, but I agree with the fact that Kevin Garnett, you know, you put the pieces right now that Cat has around him, around KG. And that's even higher talent level than what KG had. I mean, for 2 years, he had Sprewell and Cassell. That was it. Other than that, he had a bunch of dudes, Anthony Peeler, you know, who could turn the ball over or hit a three. It just depends on what he felt like.
And he got Bahama Mamas before the game. I can vouch for that because I worked at Applebee's.
You had Stop and Pop. You had Marbury for a couple years, but then it was like Marbury, Googs, and Garnett. That was the thing. But we can keep going down memory lane. I guess my point is to all of this is that something's wrong, like you said and like I said, about the Celtics should not be retiring, you know, Garnett's jersey. Yeah, he won a championship there. That's the other argument. But
no, before us. They should be doing it. It's just before us.
Just before us is the issue. And, you know, we drafted a 19-year-old kid out of Chicago, Beanpole. You know, this kid was skinny as hell. But I look back, man, I watched this stupid YouTube thing, 21 minutes of Kevin Garnett talking about when he was young to when he was old. And the kid's just a freak. He was a freak his whole life. Great, great player, greatest basketball player that's probably come through this place. And you got to put that number in the Raptors. I don't care what the beef is. It ain't big enough to keep that guy's number unretired in Minnesota.
Exactly. And that should wrap it up. We'll be back next week. Thanks, as always, for listening. And let's see if we can get some W's down the stretch for both squads. We'll be back. You guys take it easy. Enjoy the season. Let us coach. Peace.